Bet the Board in conjunction with NASCAR presents Stay Green. Stay Green is your first stop for all the metrics, matchups, and money-making opportunities at the track each race week. This is Stay Green, the NASCAR betting podcast. Here are your hosts, Todd Furman and racing analyst Chris Wormy.
Welcome into the Stay Green podcast, a Bet the Board production in conjunction with NASCAR. We turn our attention away from the Quaker State 400 and all the carnage we saw unfold last weekend in Atlanta and focus on the Northeast as we head up to New Hampshire for the AmBetter 301. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by racing analyst Chris Wormy. And Wormy, I know it was a race. We put a little bit of a long shot bet down on Noah Gragson inside the top 10. We don't need to dwell on that, but overall, I think NASCAR happy with the quality of racing they saw, but still an unbettable product for you and I every time we go to Atlanta moving forward, I think.
Yeah, it's so hard because I love the sport and I love betting it so much that even if I turn it on, I can't help myself. And in even opening Twitter, so I'm sitting at my mom's house, I'm like not paying attention. I open Twitter and I all of a sudden see a bunch of tweets like, I hope LaJoy pulls us off. Well, so obviously I run to the TV and I like turn it on with just enough time to see Chastain wreck Hamlin. And I'm like, is my life a simulation? Like, what are the chances? Like, LaJoy is about to win. Was running up front, and then to see Chastain get wrecked by, or to see Hamlin get wrecked by Chastain, I was like, this is awesome. I love my life. And then I watched the rest of the race, which still not bettable in my opinion.
Yeah, a very interesting race. When you look at it, Chase Elliott wins stage one, Chase Elliott wins stage two, and Chase Elliott grabs the checkered flag, a race that he obviously said meant the world to him, winning on his home track, but far from the truly dominant performance. And just a real quick race recap for those folks who didn't have a chance to watch in its entirety. We saw 27 lead changes among 12 drivers and 13 cautions. Obviously, an eventful day on the newly reconfigured and repaved Atlanta Motor Speedway. When you look at Atlanta, more than 55 different cars were collected in incidents in the two races this year. It's 11 times more than the five cars collected in incidents in both Atlanta Cup races back in 2021. The total this year, nearly four times the number of cars involved in the incidents in the seven races at Atlanta before this season. Simply incredible. 72 lead changes overall in Atlanta's two races. In 2021, 21 lead changes. Track had a total of 68 lead changes in the four races before the season. So NASCAR knew what they were getting. We talked about it and bemoaned the fact that it's not really bettable, but I can't argue with the entertainment product that's out there. I may be a little bit salty with the long shot bet I put out there on the 19. Thought I was sitting pretty with about six or eight laps to go, and as we've seen so many times, shuffled back. And even more further illustration of why we encourage people not to run and bet some of the ancillary markets, the top 10s, because you could be running first or second, and you get shuffled back to about 15th place. Just ask the folks that had a healthy price on Corey LaJoy as we came to that white flag. But Chase Elliott, the headliner, he wins the race. And when you look at Chase's results over his last three, a win in Atlanta, finishes second at Road America, wins the race at Nashville. And I have to ask, do you see the nine car starting to show consistency and gain a swagger that makes him a worthy favorite to win the season-long championship as we see his price widely available now at 4-1?
Absolutely not.
care to elaborate on NASCAR's most popular driver, my friend?
I know. I'm just making a bunch of friends here tonight. Here's why. Okay, I'll give Chase the benefit of the doubt at Nashville that he did have a good car once the sun went down after the rain delay. However, it was a little bit of a strategy play that got him into that position. He actually pitted and took tires. He was the first car to pit and take tires, which, and then he ended up getting had a great restart and then was able to run cars down and had a little bit of a longer run, and that solidified his track position and it eventually won him the race. It wasn't like he drove through the field. It was still strategy. Then you're looking at Road America. I mean, Chase is great on road courses, but you didn't see a ton of passing, and as soon as Chase was passed by Reddick, Reddick got out to what, like a 5 second lead. So I don't think that, you know, and then obviously the win in Atlanta. Yeah, it was good racing. I'd be very curious to see what people's response would have been to the end of the Atlanta race had, let's just say, Chastain been leading. And let's just say he goes to block Chase Elliott like Elliott blocked LaJoy. I think that the fans would be singing quite a different tune when it comes to Ross Chastain. So I do think that obviously you need to win races, but I just haven't seen the dominance or the speed in the car on ovals that I think is going to be imperative to win the chase.
When you look at Chase Elliott, four straight top tens now. He's got a 47-point lead for the regular season championship that we know can be extremely valuable as we head to the 10-race postseason schedule. And that lead comes over Ryan Blaney and the driver you just mentioned in Ross Chastain. Obviously, Ross Chastain grabbing headlines with seemingly every week for a dust-up with Denny Hamlin that you referenced at the top of the show. And I have to ask you, when you look at Ross Chastain, we've seen speed every single week. He's got 13 top 10s, which has him tied with Chase Elliott for the best in the Cup Series. He's got 10 top 5s, which is blowing away everybody else. Are the tactics we're seeing from the one on a week-in, week-out basis good as far as displaying his aggression and his capabilities of winning a championship? Or do you think it can ultimately be his undoing, knowing that there are a number of drivers, not just the 11, we heard the 3, we've heard the 19 in recent weeks, that could potentially be looking for retribution at some point when it matters most?
Yeah, I think it really hurts his chances. I know you're sitting on a big championship ticket there, so sorry.
We'll worry about that when we get to Phoenix. Okay, that's a sunk cost at this point. You can't hedge. You can't do anything with it. You bury it in the deep recesses of your gambling mind, and you open it up on Christmas Day, which in this case would be November 6th. You go, all right, I got a puncher's chance here. I can find a way to earn off of this thing.
Yeah, so I do think it hurts his chances. It's almost like he's like Will Ferrell in Old School when he blacks out for a second. It's like he does that when he's racing. Like, he knows he can't be that aggressive. He just can't help himself. And I find it shocking because someone like that he has a championship speed in his car right now. And you're still going to need someone to help you a little bit when it, you know, kind of comes down the stretch. And he's just not cutting anybody any breaks. And I think in the end it's going to hurt. I hope it doesn't come down to the Logano Kenseth thing that we've seen in the past. I don't like that. And I know that Denny's hinted that way, and I wouldn't put that past Denny at all. So I hope it doesn't come to that, but I do think he has something coming, and I don't know what it's going to be. I doubt that he goes scot-free the rest of, I don't, he goes scot-free through the playoffs. I think that there will be a time when he's wrecked. Hopefully it's in the first round or the second round, and, you know, maybe force him to win, and hopefully then everything's all square. But I do think it does hurt his chances.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a part of the sport, racing hard and going out there fighting for a victory. And you heard it in Chase Elliott's comments. You know, he said he had to be aggressive in his block of Corey LaJoy. And he goes, I'm going to take what's behind door number one, essentially, and I'm paraphrasing here, every time if it means I can go out there and win a race. I think Chastain on some level has to understand there's a time to be aggressive and there's a time to know, okay, I have to scale back that aggression. I have a faster car. I'm going to get an opportunity to pass. I don't need to get up on the rear quarter panel of the 11, you know, when we're racing inside the top 10, especially on a track like Atlanta, where there's so much banging going on. And I almost wonder on some level, I've never been in a car, I'll never race at this level. I couldn't tell you the last time I raced a go-kart, if Ross Chastain would be better served to go, you know what? I'm out there. I'm trying to win. I'm not going to apologize to anybody. He said he doesn't worry about making friends. He did admit, though, he has phone numbers of other guys in the garage now, that instead of, oh, you know, I'm sorry about this, you wonder the right approach. And unfortunately, I don't have that, but it is fascinating as we look at it, not from just an on racing standpoint, but in terms of how we approach handicapping matchups week to week, the outright market, and the big picture as it pertains to the one, knowing that these kind of things could factor into our ability to earn off his driving ability.
Yeah, that's really hard. I mean, you want to back him because he's fast. You just don't know when the payback might come. The drivers that he's had an issue with are they can't risk, you know, wrecking him and potentially taking themselves out because they're still trying to win this championship as well. And I think right now, I don't think you'll see that unless one of them has an issue early. And then, you know, we could see something kind of like we did at Gateway where Denny's just stalking Chastain, which was almost laughable. What am I watching? It was like bumper cars out there. So I don't see anything happening if they're just running competitively. But if someone has an issue and they're a couple laps down or they have damage, I think we could see at some point, you know, a little bit of a dog and pony show like we had at Gateway.
Yeah, we did see Denny Hamlin's social team get in on the fun in the wake of what unfolded in Atlanta. And maybe, you know, one of the creative social media folks out there can set Denny and Ross to a little bit of Jaws music for Shark Week, given what we saw there. But you'd love to see the racing on track decide who ultimately wins a championship, the highest honor, of course, in the NASCAR series. Do want to talk about one other driver before we kind of pivot away. And we'll get into the Tyler Reddick situation, not necessarily from gambling implications, but I do think it is worth addressing. I want to remind all of you, our loyal listeners, whether it's the first time you found Stay Green or you've been with us from the very start, you can follow Chris on Twitter. That's Chris Wermy, ChrisWerme, 15 on Twitter. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Plenty of great Stay Green updates and hopefully some fun things that we'll be able to share with you in coming weeks, maybe even a live show for the Stay Green crew coming up in early August. Austin Cindric, rookie for Team Penske. We know he took over the two. One Daytona, started out on an absolute high. And when you look at the way he's been racing of late, four straight top 10 finishes, he's been 11th or better in six of seven races. And when you look at Blaney and Logano, they're obviously the headliners as the grizzled veterans, so to speak. Austin Cindric appears to be gaining confidence. Do we think he's showing signs of sustainability there? Or do you think it's been the recent run of tracks that have given the two the ability to rack up top 10s?
Well, I definitely think it's the recent run of tracks. You're looking at two road courses. You're looking at a lower tire wear track in Nashville, and then you know, Atlanta and the plate racing. So I think now I don't want to discount his performance. I mean, he went out there and won the Daytona 500. That's awesome. I just haven't seen him be competitive on high wear tracks. That's where he's always struggled. He always has speed on the short runs, but long runs, he's really struggled. So I do think that he's on a little bit of a hot streak, and I think that will definitely help his confidence. But I don't know that a track like this week, I expect him to struggle a little bit, but ultimately we do have some unknowns here with just this new car and how many, you know, will there be multiple grooves? What will tire wear look like? But right now, I think that that's a product of just very convenient tracks for him.
And arguably two of the greatest comps. We'll get into the handicap of this weekend in New Hampshire, where Phoenix and Richmond, and you look at how the two ran there. He came home 24th at Phoenix, another flat mile track, and Richmond came in 20th. You can even look back, and it's not quite apples to apples. Didn't have the highest level of success like, say, a Christopher Bell did running in New Hampshire and Xfinity. So correct. Something to watch for in terms of the way he's going to be priced, knowing how well these Penske's have qualified, and maybe even some opportunity to fade him in some of those individual matchups. We'll wave the white flag here with one to go for stage one. I wanted to get your take on the Tyler Reddick news that came out this week. Obviously, we know the eight will be headed to 23XI Racing beginning in 2024. No indication if he'll take over the 45 for Kurt Busch, who wide speculation says maybe he'll be ready to retire then, or what Denny Hamlin and company will do with the 23, where Bubba Wallace continues to struggle. But clearly his current team in RCR, none too thrilled with the timing of that announcement, and I found it awfully interesting for Tyler Reddick, kind of defending, hey, look, we're getting out there ahead of it a few weeks before the playoffs. Says he's going to honor his contract, but man, you want to talk about a lame duck driver not only through this postseason, 2023 going to be an awful lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Ross Chastain should send Denny Hamlin and Tyler Reddick a big thank you card, because I thought that we were going to be talking about this Chastain, Hamlin, or just Chastain in general, you know, kind of wrecking the field last week. But man, this really overshadowed everything. And I was shocked about a few things. I mean, this has only happened once before, and I was on with Phil with Full Tank with Phil. He has a podcast on Spotify and Apple, and he's a silly season guy, and he was bringing up this happened to Casey Kane, and of course Casey Kane was they didn't honor his contract, and so he had to go race for Red Bull for a year, and that really hurt his career, hurt his momentum, and I just don't know, how does RCR keep him next year? I just don't know, like, what it,
I mean, I look at all this stuff and I look at the drivers that are available, and this is all speculation. We don't have any inside insight, but say hypothetically the 18 doesn't renew his contract with Joe Gibbs Racing and they decide that Ty Gibbs is ready to race for his grandfather's racing team, making the 18 a free agent. If you're RCR, how do you not at least pick up the phone? Not saying the 18 would race for them, but to go, you know what, Tyler, we that's great. Thank you. We appreciate you being willing to honor your commitment, but we have the chance to grab another driver to fill that seat and make a long-term commitment there. I just feel like there are so many unknowns here. And if you're RCR, you go, I'm not going to make a knee-jerk decision. I'm not going to do anything rash, but I want to see what drivers are available. And if I have an opportunity to sign a driver to a longer-term deal, and it very well may not be Kyle Busch, it could be somebody else. I'm talking pie in the sky here. How do you not take that opportunity than letting another race team snatch up a good driver?
Yeah, I think it was a little disrespectful, but it also buys time for RCR. I mean, I don't know that, I think that they've had more speed than 23XI, and I know that, you know, this is still 2 years away. It seemed like a little bit of a lateral move, in my opinion, for Reddick. Now, I don't think 23XI and Denny Hamlin and Michael Jordan are going to settle for a mediocre team. Like, that's not what they set out to do. They're two of the most competitive humans to ever walk this planet. So just right now, I think it kind of buys RCR time. You know, they can, if something happens, or, you know, I think I'd be shocked if Kyle Busch does not sign with Gibbs, but hey, I also didn't think that we would see Tyler Reddick sign with 23XI. So man, there can be a lot that can happen. I mean, RCR, they have, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Noah Gregson. There's been, and I'm a big Josh Berry guy. I think if I could move somebody into that eight car right now, it would be Josh Berry. You know, I think what he's shown, the composure he's shown at the Xfinity level, I think he would have immediate respect from all of the Cup drivers. And the one thing about Josh Berry is he gets better throughout the race. And that's kind of a sign of, you know, a champion or someone that can go out there and win races. So, man, this was kind of the first like piece of the puzzle that kind of just was laid on the table, like way before anyone else had any of the puzzle pieces even out. So I don't know what's going to happen. I certainly don't think Ty Gibbs will be up there in the Cup Series yet. But man, after this week, who knows?
Yeah, going to make things awfully interesting because you obviously have one available seat for Stuart Haas as well. We know Eric Almirola going to retire at the end of the season. So many moving pieces, so many talented drivers out there. And I wish I remembered who made the comment, but it came in the wake of Corey LaJoie finishing the race at Atlanta. Somebody saying, hey, look, there's a lot of drivers out there that are talented, but this may be a guy that you put him in the right equipment will have a chance to go out there and make things happen. You know, much like Alex Bowman when they finally gave him a ride, you know, with Hendrick Motorsports, we've seen him scratch the surface of what he can do, albeit probably fourth if we're talking about the pecking order for that prestigious race team. But always interesting stuff, not necessarily bettable information by any stretch of the imagination, but you do wonder what the playoff dynamic could look like or how some of the future odds will shift as we hit the fast forward button going into 2023. As always here for Stage 2 Worm, we shift gears away from what we saw last on the track in terms of trying to dissect some of the handicapping principles to make all of our listeners a little bit smarter every time we do this. And I think, you know, we talk all the time that every track isn't created equally. So you have to be very careful when you're talking about momentum. And I think you did an excellent job highlighting that, not only with Chase Elliott, but Austin Cindric. So when I look at current form for drivers, do I kind of throw it out the window and just find more comparable tracks? Or how do I truly create some of that balancing act when I look to put together at least a baseline for handicapping the next race on the schedule?
Well, I think this is kind of the hardest time in the schedule to answer that question because of the races that we've had, you know, with Atlanta, Road America, Sonoma, and Nashville. You know, those are very, very different tracks that I think it was really hard to kind of predict what was going to happen. I'm not surprised that Austin Cindric ran well at those types of tracks at all. But then, you know, looking forward, New Hampshire is very different, you know, very flat, long corners, a lot of braking and off throttle time, which I'm a big fan of. So, man, that, you know what, I'm kind of, that's a tough question. I'll just say right now, current form is not as important just because I think those tracks are so different than the tracks we're going to see here in the next few weeks, in my opinion. So, but that's a really tough one. I'm really glad you put me on the spot here with probably the hardest question that I'll have this season.
If I gave you all the answers to the kind of content that we were going to cover here, we wouldn't be able to get that level of authenticity that we seek to create. It's not for that gotcha moment, but it's to get you thinking and get those wheels spinning, just so our listeners have an idea of exactly how much different handicapping NASCAR on a week-in, week-out basis can be compared to some of the other sports, because obviously there is a recency bias that'll factor into some of the numbers, but at the same time, odds makers are put in a bit of a box themselves, trying to figure out how much weighting they need to put on what they've seen last as far as driver performance, what they've seen earlier in the season for track comps. And you talked about in our very first episode, it's all about price illustration. So when we look at New Hampshire, which is a flat mile track, we'll go to the tricky triangle with Pocono, which can be high horsepower where you need speed on the straightaways. We go to Indianapolis Motor Speedway to race on the road course for the Ryzen 200 at the end of the month. And as if any of those tracks have anything in common, we go to Michigan for a 2 mile oval that has some components of plate track racing from time to time. So a lot of wrenches and irons in the fire when you try and figure out how to handicap and put all these things together, which probably segues to an interesting topic. And I'm not quite sure if you got vitriol for talking about average green flag speed and some of the other stuff that you spewed last weekend. So the fact that you're alive and not in witness protection program by NASCAR standard is always a step in the right direction. But I wanted to ask you about pit times. We see it widely discussed, and we know certain pit crews have come under scrutiny. No greater illustration than Bubba Wallace reaming his team, or Christopher Bell losing a wheel, albeit his team not getting suspended because they lost the wheel on pit road, so it didn't create any hazard as far as racing. But time getting on pit road, time actually in your pit box, and time getting off pit road, some people like to really build some handicapping models around this. I think it's a variable that you can factor in. But how much should you be weighting this kind of thing? And in your opinion, is it a little bit too nebulous to really impact the decision you're making to bet into outrights, to bet into group bets, and more importantly, some of the head-to-heads?
Yeah, I guess right off the top of my head, if your final metric to make a decision rests on your pit stop time, that number's probably pretty tight. I don't think there's any reason to force it. However, I was just on a Twitter Spaces this evening discussing when Ryan, I wish I had his Twitter handle right in front of me, but
the Twitter Spaces on Wednesday you're talking about that you guys do, since I know our show doesn't drop until Friday. So for those folks who want to check it out. You're great about that. You tweeted out, and for those folks who are looking for more NASCAR content, it's a little bit different. You definitely have to follow Chris. He loves to share some of his media availability and obviously is diving full on into the NASCAR community. So if Stay Green isn't enough for you, follow Chris. He'll tweet all that stuff out, and you guys can get involved. But I didn't want to cut you off, so go ahead.
Yeah, no. It was Ryan Stevens on Twitter, and he has a ton of information that he posts on his Twitter feed, and he relies a little bit on pit stop times, and I was obviously I'm always open to hearing an explanation as to why that's important. So my question was, you know, is he going off of just the actual pit stop itself, or is it, you know, pit road entry to exit? And here's why I think that it will be important from a entry to exit. That's where you're going to make up spots, right? It's why Kyle Busch under green flag pit stops is phenomenal. It's because he's great at getting on pit road and he's great at getting off pit road. That's where you can have you can make a big difference in your pit road time. I think with this one lug, you're seeing much tighter pit stop times. So that entry and exit's really important. Now, if we could tie this into you know, qualifying, because I think more than I've ever seen in this sport, it's important to have a great pit stall, because times are so small, or the differences are so small, that you really can only make up so much time in the pit box. But if you end up blocked in, you can't get in or out, and you lose two or three spots, and it's tough to pass out there, and you're mid-pack, that's tough. That's a long day. So I'm not quite sure. It's a little bit of a stretch for me at this point, at least at this point in the season, and from what I've seen. I'm not ruling it out, but maybe down the line. I'll take a look at it a little bit more. But seriously, if your bet is hinging on that, I think you should just not make that bet.
But I do think you raise a very good point here, you know, talking about some of the metrics that are there. I mean, oftentimes as sports bettors, we find ourselves in a position where we're talking ourselves into making bets. And, you know, I think some of the best handicappers that I talk to on a day-to-day basis, and some of the coaching you've given me specifically for NASCAR, you know, you almost have to play devil's advocate. It's easy to see a price and go, you know what, I love driver A over driver B for X, Y, and Z reasons. But you almost have to flip the script and go, okay, what are the reasons that I'm not factoring into my handicap, why driver B can be better? And if you can talk yourself out of a bet, sometimes that's the best situation to be in, because we know running or outrunning the 11 to 10 that works in the bookmaker's advantage can be a little bit more difficult. So you're better served going 0-0 in your head-to-head matchups than you are 1-1 on a week-in, week-out basis. So when you're talking about narrow margins, and we've discussed at great lengths, you know, the kind of efficiencies that we see in head-to-head matchups, there's a reason when we offer some of those up on race day on Sunday, which we encourage you guys to check out the Bet the Board website for that intel, because we're trying to find the best opportunities, and it shouldn't be shocking if some of those prices are moving 20, 30, or maybe even 40 cents once we've decided to take our strongest positions.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, there's a few people, you know, the successful gambling community is pretty small for people that actually do this for a living and make money. And it's kind of funny. We all say the same thing. It's talk me off this bet. You know, we don't say I like this. We say just, hey, talk me off this. And it's not, there's not like arrogance. It's genuinely, if you can come up with a good reason for me to not bet it, I would happily not bet it. It's very different from, oh, this is a lock. And it's funny, you hear locks a lot. oh, that's a lock. You can cash that ticket. It's like, yeah. Why don't you do this for a few more years and you'll see when you lose a race because of fog or, you know, someone doesn't pass inspection.
You mean you didn't have Chris Buescher at Pocono when he won his first ever cup race?
No, I had the two fastest cars, Truex and Harvick. Like, I mean, who stays out for fog? I mean, and it's funny, I actually had to talk about this recently, and you know, the worst one for us was for sure Chastain not passing inspection at Iowa in the truck series.
Unbelievable. I'll never forget it.
I mean, that's the worst one. To think you've won and then to get the text after, we have a problem. That was the worst.
I took a nap. I honestly fell asleep. I was so drained from watching that race and having the opportunity to cash a 30-1 ticket. I thought I was being punked when the first text I got from you was, what are the house rules on the truck race?
Yeah.
Anytime someone starts a text message with that kind of
house
thing,
rules,
it's
yeah.
Not exactly a ringing endorsement for how things are going to go. As always with stage two, when we go one to go, it's all about where you can find the NASCAR on-track activities this weekend. And it's USA Network more or less from start to finish. On Friday at 5:00 Eastern, Xfinity Series practice followed by Xfinity Series qualifying. It does look like the weather forecast is going to be somewhat favorable. We know it can change at a moment's notice when you're within an hour or 2 hours driving distance of Boston, but should be temps in the low 80s. Partly sunny, 25% chance of rain. We'll roll that into Saturday, where things will get started early, especially for those of us on the West Coast, with Cup Series practice on USA Network at 11:35 Eastern, followed up by Cup Series qualifying, and then the Xfinity Series race will drop the green flag at 2:30 Eastern for the Cran 200, 200 laps, or 211.6 miles. And of course, the culmination of race weekend at New Hampshire Motor Speedway comes on Sunday. There is an opportunity for a stray thunderstorm storm, and it wouldn't be New Hampshire if there wasn't some wetness. We can talk about what unfolded there last year that wrecked arguably one of the best cars going into the race a few laps in. 40% chance of rain, but that green flag will drop at 3 p.m. Eastern for the Cup Series and Better 301, 301 laps that'll cover 318 plus miles. Stage 3 Worm, Ambetter 301, formerly the Foxwoods 301, and we could go through the laundry list of names that have been attached to this race in the past. Some track details here. We're going to use the same tire compound as New Hampshire as we did at Gateway, Richmond, and Phoenix, as we've talked about extensively, slightly more than a one-mile oval in lovely Loudoun, New Hampshire. They've been racing the Cup Series here since 1990, and it's the lone true venue in the Northeast. I don't count Pocono and Long Pond in Western PA or Eastern PA as Northeast or New England. Flat, and flatter, probably the best way to describe this track. Straights are banked at 1 degree, turns banked anywhere from 2 to 7 degrees. And when you look at previous winners, Eric Almirola in 2021, we had Brad Keselowski and Kevin Harvick take home the checkered flags before that. Harvick actually won back-to-back, and it was Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin, and Kevin Harvick. We did used to run here two times a year up until 2018. 14 of the last 15 winners have come from the Ford or Toyota camp, with Ford winning the last four. And you talked about pit road and how important it has been all season long with the next-gen car. Well, 7 of the last 10 winners at New Hampshire have started 8th or worse, and I guess it's a good place for us to start. Is that a trend worth knowing, or are we placing a ton of emphasis on getting that pole position and having the first pit stall, knowing that we could see this be a spot where you're picking up the most in track position on pit road?
Yeah, I probably won't factor that in at all. I'm going to try to bet the car that I think is fastest in practice, whether they're starting first or, you know, starting 21st. But by the way, that was a hell of a read, bud. I mean, that was
I'm trying to beef things up. I'm not going to be half naked when this show ultimately becomes digital. I'm not going to have a green screen where I can point to New Hampshire. I can walk you through what highways to access the track, what time the concession stand open. We're trying to do our fair share to encourage people to tune in, not just for the race and to watch the last 10 laps, but understand the NASCAR betting experience is all encompassing, and you have to be as engaged in practice as you do the race itself.
Hey, I thought you did a great job, but I was taking a sip of water when you said that you started talking about the weather. Like, what is he talking about? But it is nice. It is important to factor in the weather if there's rain in the forecast, because you're going to see people take chances. And well, I hope that last year was kind of a one-off. You know, that would be terrible if just guys were sliding off the track and then NASCAR throws the caution. But
eight laps in, and I'm sure Kyle Busch would hope that the race never actually started, given how fast the 18 was leading up to that race.
Yeah, I agree. So, hey, great read. I do think that, you know, this is one of those tracks. It's kind of a rhythm track and high tire wear. You see kind of the same guys, be faster, year in and year out. I don't think that I'm going to factor in the eighth or worse. I think that, you know, you just want to bet the fastest car, in my opinion. My hot take of the day. Bet the faster car.
Generally, that is a good approach. If you want to win betting motorsports, whether it's the NASCAR Cup Series, whether Xfinity Trucks, F1, IndyCar, IMSA, you name it. If you can bet on the fastest car, you're going to put yourself in a good spot, obviously, if the price warrants it. And speaking of price, we see one driver that is now listed as more or less the consensus favorite across the board, and that would be Ryan Blaney. A price tag we'll call 6-1. He's followed by a couple of drivers, all priced in the single digits. Kyle Busch, Joey Logano, Martin Truex, Denny Hamlin, and Chase Elliott. Depending on where you shop, you can find Chase outwards of 12-1. And then you get into that next group of drivers: Ross Chastain, Kyle Larson, Kevin Harvick, Christopher Bell, all 20-1 or less, and then some of the value propositions that are out there. When you look at the best average finish here over the last three trips, Kevin Harvick, Brad Keselowski, albeit in different equipment, Denny Hamlin, and Joey Logano are actually the only four in the Cup Series with an average finish better than a top six. Eric Almirola, surprisingly enough, checks in just behind them at 6.3. We know Brad is still trying to figure things out with RFK. Not sure you can obviously put any stock in what we've seen from the previous finishes. But I guess if we're going to start and look at some of the drivers here, the JGR camp makes a ton of sense, in my opinion, given the unfortunate situation we saw Kyle Busch in last year and Denny Hamlin. These two drivers, fair or foul the way that they're being priced for this weekend's race?
I actually think Kyle opened a little higher. I think you've seen his price dip just a little bit. You know, Kyle's been, you know, kind of feast or famine this year. And I think when you have a new car like this, you know, you need to be on the same page. And he just gets so upset on the radio. I just think that there's
no.
I know
Kyle Busch gets upset. That may be your hot take of the show.
Yeah,
honestly,
yeah, exactly.
Not just bet the fastest car. The Kyle Busch gets upset during the course of races.
Yeah. So, and I just think that that might hurt has hurt them a little bit. I fully expect the Gibbs guys to be fast. You know, I think that, you know, even you throw Chris Bell in there, I think those guys will be fast. When it comes to Ryan Blaney, you kind of have to price him as the favorite. You know, he hasn't won this year, which is still kind of funny, but you know, he qualifies so well. He puts himself in such a great position to win. It's tough not to make him the favorite. So, I'm not sure on those shorter priced guys who I think might step out and kind of be the, kind of the class of the field. I think that there's a little bit of value, you know, deeper in this field where hopefully we can make some money taking a position there.
Yeah, I mean, and you talk about Kyle Busch and having some erratic finishes. You look at his last four races, 20th at Atlanta, 29th at Road America, 21st at Nashville, 30th in Sonoma, and that comes on the heels of a stretch where in 8 of 9 races, he finished inside the top 10, and most of those were 7th or better, including a number of 2nd and 3rd place finishes. So it really has been a feast or famine season for the 18, and I think to your point, the same can be said for Denny Hamlin. He hasn't exactly been the model of consistency when you're talking about an average finish barely inside the top 20, but he does have 2 wins to his credit, and this is a track where he has typically done well, and we saw him perform at Richmond, albeit not with the fastest car, but winning that race on strategy, so you'd think that would have give him some confidence going forward. When we look at Stewart Haas Racing, there's no doubt that this is a team has to be a little bit disappointed in some of the results they've been able to accumulate this season. We know Kevin Harvick's winless streak continues to get ramped up, and the Ford desperate as anybody to try and get that victory and punch his ticket to the playoffs. When you look at Harvick, top 10 in 18 straight races at Phoenix, 10 of the last 12 at Richmond as well, and 4th best average finish this year, despite not showing race-winning speed more often on a week-in, week-out basis. Eric Almirola, as we talked about earlier, won here last season, led 25 laps, and he's actually been 11th or better in 4 straight trips to New Hampshire, and the nice part about that, he's led laps in all of those races. So if I'm looking at Stewart Haas Racing, seeing these drivers and both these prices have been on the move, are either one of these guys at all attractive for you, knowing how well they've raced here in the past, albeit we're coming this season with a very different car?
Yeah, before I get into the specifics on Harvick and Almirola, because I am opinionated on both of them, I want to talk about the tracks or the comparable tracks that I'm going to be using to cap this.
And that's a good point. That's on me. I kind of assumed that at the top. So definitely glad you cut me off. So go ahead and share that intel.
Yeah, so here's the thing. They're using the same tire from Richmond, Gateway, and Phoenix. However, I didn't include Gateway, and I'll get to that in a second. Last year, Eric Almirola had a great car. I don't necessarily think that he had the best car. He had the best car at the right time. I watched the race earlier this week, and you know, it's hard to tell whether the Gibbs guys would have been dominant or not. I certainly think that Kyle Busch would have been very competitive. You also had Logano that ran a ton of fast laps, even though he was a lap down. He didn't have enough time to kind of get back up there. You saw Brad Keselowski was really good on short runs. Eric Almirola good on the medium length runs. And then at the end, I guess you could say Almirola was saved by the bell. Otherwise, Chris Bell was going to catch him. So if they weren't trying to get, you know, done and get out of there for the Olympics, I don't know if Bell ends up winning that race. But so I wanted to look back at what I thought was a great explanation for why Eric Almirola was good there last year. Yes, he's been great at this track, but I started to do some digging. And so I took the first Phoenix race of last year, and I also took the first Richmond race of last year. So basically, if I was handicapping last year's race, I took the stats from that race just to see if something popped. And I'm really glad I looked at this. And it wasn't like I expected this. This was just kind of luck. This is a something that you just I kind of stumbled across. So Eric Almirola in those tracks had the ninth best average finish. And you think, well, that's not very good. But his average start on those two tracks was 27th. Everyone else that had a great finish had great starting spots, with the exception of Bowman. His average finish on those two tracks was 7, and Alex Bowman's was 22nd. It was a starting spot. And then Eric Almirola, his average finish was 8.5, but his average starting spot was 27. And it was hard to pass last year on those tracks. So that meant Eric Almirola had a great handling race car, and I can see why he went out and won at Loudon. Does that make sense? You following that?
Yeah, I'm following the convoluted logic. I mean, there's a good chance once we get into post-production here, I may actually have to go back and listen and diagram all of that out to make sure I didn't miss anything in there.
Okay. Basically, I can see why Eric Almirola was so good here last year. If I take those same stats and apply them to this year, it doesn't paint the same picture. First of all, you'd be shocked at who has the best average finish at those two tracks is actually Kevin Harvick, who is someone that I definitely like this week. But you don't see the same from Eric Almirola. He has not had the same production. He's qualified well, but he's done nothing but fade. His average starting spot is 7.5, and his average finish is 16.5, which is kind of the opposite of, I think, what you want to see going into a track that would have similar similar specs. So essentially, I threw out Gateway because ultimately tires didn't matter at Gateway, and they do matter at Phoenix, they matter at Loudon, and they matter at Richmond. So I just threw out Gateway because I felt like, here's the deal, when you get to Gateway and you get to that final pit stop, once you have enough fuel to make it to the end in a green-white checkered, you're not getting tires again. At Phoenix and Richmond and Loudon, if there's a 60-lap run to the finish and there's a caution with 30 laps into that, everyone is pitting and taking 4 tires. So that's why I decided to go with Phoenix and Richmond as the two tracks that I would use to cap this race. So with that being said, I'm hesitant to back Almirola at this point. I think that he's kind of racy. He has to win in order to get in. I don't think he can point his way there. So he has to take risks. And whenever that happens, you can make mistakes. And if he doesn't have a great handling race car, these things can snap loose really, really quickly. So that's why I'm not that high on Eric Almirola. And then we'll get to Harvick in a second. But that's what I used to kind of cap this race. I know it was a little confusing and kind of mumbled there for a while, but ultimately I'm not as high on Almirola as I was last year.
No, and I think the other thing too that's worth mentioning for Almirola, correct me if I'm wrong, and I should have had this information in front of me, which I unfortunately don't, he didn't go off at 25-1 like he's being priced for this week's race.
Correct. Yeah, so I actually was supposed to go to this race, and my flight was canceled, and so I was like, you know what, I'll fly back to Vancouver and I just won't bet the race. But I remember saying, my girlfriend asked, she goes, well, would you have bet anybody? I said, well, Eric Almirola at 60-1. I mean, he's good there. I mean, I doubt he's going to win, but, you know, and I didn't bet him, so I can't say that it was a great call. But, you know, you're talking about 60 and 25-1. That's a drastic difference. I just think he's overpriced right now. I don't see any value on him. Listen, if he looks good after practice and qualifying, I have no problem firing on him at 15-1. He's proven he can win here, but I'd rather see that than taking a little bit of a flyer at 25-1 that I think at a place where I think he could struggle more than people think.
Hey, it makes a ton of sense. I mean, that's the reality of it. And unfortunately for Stuart Haas Racing on a week-in, week-out basis, we haven't seen a ton of front-running speed. So it'll be interesting to see where the 10 and the 4 ultimately qualify heading into the race on Sunday. We talked a little bit about Ryan Blaney at the top, since he is the favorite for this weekend's race. We know how fast he's been, more or less, on a week-in, week-out basis, but still looking for that elusive win. He, of course, did win the non-points race at Texas as part of the All-Star festivities. But his teammate here in Joey Logano. Logano won at Gateway, and we saw his odds crash. I think he opened pre-week at 18, went off at 6-1. It was a ticket that you and I thought was a low price, but we felt he had the utmost speed. Have to admit, we were relatively fortunate to cash that ticket, but did get some matchups there as well. Top four finishes each of the past two trips to New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Are you buying the 22 at the current price, or do you think this is a fair reflection of what we've seen at comparable tracks?
Yeah, I'm actually not that high on Logano. You know, he was great last year at this track, but remember, he was great at Phoenix and Richmond last year as well. His average starting spot was 7 at those two tracks last year, and his average finish was 2.5. This year, it's just not the same. His average qualifying is 10.5, and his average finish on those two tracks are 12.5. So, although, I mean, hey, Logano could unload well and look great. In my opinion, the car that he had at Gateway in practice was the fastest car relative to the field that I've seen all year. And we were lucky to win that. To be honest, looking back, we had way too much money on Logano for the car that he actually had. I kind of expected him to just drive straight to the lead and set sail, and he didn't. And so I kind of, you know, want to pause here and say, hey, you know, even if a car looks really, really good in practice, it might not necessarily mean that he's going to run away with this thing. And I do think that Logano was a little bit lucky to be on the right end of strategy with tires to win that race at Gateway. And trust me, I was happy that it happened. I'm just not buying him. Now, Ryan Blaney, on the other hand, I am going to go ahead and buy Ryan Blaney. And when I say buy, it doesn't mean I'm betting him. He's qualified on the pole at the two tracks that I'm looking at both times. So his average start is 1, his average finish is 5.5. Where Blaney struggles, if he ever ends up in traffic, he just has such a hard time getting back that track position he's lost. I don't know if it's whether his car handles differently in traffic or his car is just that much faster in clean air. But I do think if he can kind of navigate or at least minimize some issues, whether it's on pit road or, you know, maybe some poor adjustments, I do think Ryan Blaney will run in the top three all day and potentially have a chance to win this thing. I'm not going to make a bet at 6.5. I'd rather see him in practice before I make a move on him.
Two other drivers I want to get your take on. One we touched on at the top of the show in Chase Elliott, and obviously what he's been able to accomplish in recent weeks. I think the casual fan looking at the odds board would be a little bit surprised to see the price available on the 9 car this weekend. And of course, his teammate in Kyle Larson. We know this tandem of drivers, this is far from their best style track, or at least what we've seen. What's your initial instincts tell you, not necessarily on a buy and sell, but how you're approaching the 9 and the 5 going into New Hampshire?
Well, Todd, you've been talking about the 5 being overpriced kind of all year. You know, if you just kind of blindly faded Larson across the board in matchups, you'd probably be up a significant amount of money. I think this is kind of the first time that we've seen him properly priced. This is not a great track for him. So I think that 12-1 is very fair. On the flip side of that, I think it's an opportunity. If that 5 car does unload fast and they can get that thing handling, we might be able to make some money betting Larson if he's got speed. So I'm kind of happy that he's properly priced. I don't know where he's going to land on matchups after practice and qualifying, but I do like having, or at least knowing, that you could fall back on a Larson at that 12-1 price. I'm going to need to see a little bit more out of Chase Elliott at 9-1. Like I said, I'm still not sold. I think he just needs to have kind of a perfect scenario to win races. And fortunately, he's had that scenario pop up recently. I just don't think in the long run that you can make money backing, you know, someone who's, you know, kind of in that position week in and week out.
You know, it's pretty crazy when I look at the numbers for the season, and we talk about the 5, obviously, on a week-in, week-out basis, as we rightfully should, given the fact that he's the defending champion, and how he's underwhelmed so far this season. Then you dig into the top 5s, top 10s. He still has 10 top 10s, and he's second in the Cup Series with 8 top 5s this season, putting him only behind Ross Chastain. So somewhere along the way, we have to imagine the 5 is going to hit his setup, and there are some tracks coming up that'll be very interesting. Obviously, a guy you're not going to discount in the big picture, but to your point, maybe not the optimal opportunity depending on how he unloads this weekend at New Hampshire. I know we've covered plenty of drivers, and we still have a couple other orders of business to transact here, but wanted to make sure I gave you the chance if there was any other driver that you thought was interesting and worth touching on before this weekend.
Well, I think that when it comes to betting an outright kind of before practice and qualifying. You definitely want to predict where the market's going to go. I think if you're looking to nibble something, I think Chris Bell has the, you could see his price drop more than anyone else's. Maybe a Tyler Reddick. Both of those guys did run well here last year, and they both qualify well. I think that Tyler Reddick, you know, whether he's going to have more speed in his car after the win, he's certainly going to have the confidence. I don't know the mental outlook that he has after the last 48 hours, but those would be two guys that I do think could be competitive at higher prices, but I'm not going to make a move on either one of them until after practice.
Plenty of great information as always as we wave the checkered flag on stage three, preview the race from New Hampshire and everything you can expect to factor into your handicapping. Obviously talked about some unique handicapping principles that all NASCAR novices should keep in mind. And as we always start the show with a little bit of recap and our brief opinions on silly season and what that could mean going forward. But Worm, we know one of the most important things we do around these parts is we give everybody the ingredients they can to build their own menus each and every race weekend throughout the season, but we do like to give them a pre-prepared meal. When we're talking about best bet opportunities this weekend at New Hampshire, before we reveal our matchup card on Sunday, do you see an opportunity for our folks to make a few dollars and get their money in good in the markets before these prices start to move?
Well, Todd, I'm glad you asked, because I do actually have and in my opinion the best outright bet that I've seen so far this year, and I definitely backed it with the most money that I've had it on an outright at this point in the week. Now later in the week after practice and qualifying, I will definitely add more positions, but at this point I absolutely love Kevin Harvick at 20-1. I know we've seen a little bit of movement on him, maybe in the 14 to 16 range. I haven't checked, in the last, hour and a half. But I think that Kevin Harvick, what I saw from him at Nashville, I saw someone with speed in his car that was actually aggressive. In the past, or the first, half of the season, for the most part, Kevin Harvick was just stealing finishes by staying out of trouble. But man, I saw that car have some speed. I've heard some great comments from his crew chief and Childers, and this is arguably one of his best tracks with this car. Now you can go look back at Phoenix and oh yeah, he's dominated there, but he hasn't dominated there in a long time. He's run well there, but he hasn't dominated there. I could even say right now in the recent years, I think this could be Kevin Harvick's best track. I think that they're ready to win. I know that Kevin's kind of chomping at the bit to get this thing done. And I think 20-1 is great value. So I do think he has a legit chance at winning this race. I don't know how well he's going to qualify. His average starting spot on the two tracks that I would consider comparables is 11.5. But I would certainly get your money in good here at kind of this price before practice and qualifying, because I could see that only crash. If he does qualify in the top five, look out, because he doesn't typically qualify well. But when he does, he usually gets to the front pretty quickly.
When you talk about Kevin Harvick and track dominance, yeah, I don't think the days of seeing him listed at 9-5 pre-week to win at Phoenix are coming back anytime soon with the level of parity that NASCAR has created with the next-gen car. I do have to ask, as you were going through and explaining the logic and reasoning behind that bet, seeing consensus prices upwards of 16 looks to be the market peak, low of 14. Would you say that 15 to 16 kind of the cutoff there if people are listening as we get closer to race day?
Yeah, I would take 15. I think okay. You're going to see him qualify well, and he's great at this track. It's a rhythm track. It's kind of conserve your stuff, and he's been great here in recent years. I think that you're gonna have your money in good with Kevin Harvick at 15-1.
Another fine episode of Stay Green nearly in the books as you articulate the way to handicap NASCAR and take advantage of the markets there. Do you want to give you parting remarks? Anything else you'd like to add, my friend, before we close up shop and bid our listeners a fond farewell?
No, I love this track. This is just from a betting perspective. I've had tremendous success here. And anytime that you have off throttle time in the corner and tire wear, those are the tracks that I find more predictable. So I'm excited for this week, especially after last week with something I've kind of steered clear of. I'm just looking forward to getting our money in good and watching an exciting race on Sunday.
Other thing with this track as well, for those folks who don't always have a ton of time to commit to watching a race from start to finish, this will be one of the faster races. Expect some long green flag runs. The distance isn't that crazy by any stretch of the imagination, so there's a good chance this race could finish, weather permitting, inside of 2.5-3 hours. So best of luck for all of you NASCAR enthusiasts out there. Thanks as always for tuning in to Stay Green. Feel free to interact with us on social media. As always, you can follow Chris on Twitter at ChrisWormy15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there and also the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. And come Sunday afternoon with a Kevin Harvick outright ticket in hand. Hopefully we'll see you at the window.